Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Rozier, seven on the shot clock. Irving. Got it. Oh! No space. High hockey.
I mean, those last two shots were amazing. The one in front of our bench was a joke. Oh, how tough that was, and he made it look easy.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
76-62, Lowry to Siakam, scoops it up, and under athletic finish for Pascal.
Great job, great spacing by Pascal to be in that dunking spot, and then Lowry finding him.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
There's the switch, so attack the post.
Come on, that with one hand, it drops, and a foul. And the two guys trying to block him out, and he's still... with that reach, was able to put it in.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
Hello, 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 hello. Hot, we're on, we're hot. Welcome, hello.
It's a damn thing on.
Can you hear me?
I don't know.
Are my pants on?
I don't even know why you asked that question.
Wait, what? What happened?
The microphones weren't on. So listeners couldn't hear me do the intro twice.
It was a good afternoon. I'm going to give you kudos on that one. I heard it. It was loud and clear in the studio. You gave me a solid good afternoon.
I had very good energy brought towards it. And by the third time, I'm not going to do it again. I'm out.
When it comes to the time,
I'll smack the microphone and make sure it's working.
You got two good afternoons and then you're done.
Right. You're not going to get three out of me.
You used all your good ammo up, man.
I know.
Right? Then it's not, by the third time, it's not genuine. And it's just a good afternoon.
Does that mean the show will suck? Is that the sign of like, hey, you had your chance.
Yeah,
you
probably
missed it.
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. All yeah. Right. Buckle up. It's gonna be a long one today.
Sitting over here treating this microphone like it's Malik Monk and I'm Michael Jordan, just smacking it right over the head. What the hell are you doing?
Can we talk about that? I loved that scene last night in Charlotte.
You loved it.
I loved that scene.
Wow.
He smacked one of his players in the back of the head for being a bonehead.
He tried to smack him, missed, and then he came back again and then smacked him. He got him the second time.
Don't you wish, whoever the hell that owns the Blazers now would step down and smack Myers Leonard in the back of the head every now and then? Like, dude, go do something. I'm paying you $10 million a year.
I think it'd be more apt comparison to say, not Myers, it'd be like Al Farouk. So like Jody Allen. Allen comes down and just smacks Al Farouk right in the head.
You're an NBA player. Why can't you dribble? Damn it. Smack him in the back of the head.
Why did you get a technical there, you moron?
Yeah, somebody had the tweet saying he's running his he's legit out there like an AAU dad. Like just standing right next to the bench yelling at his team. Because I didn't watch that game. Yeah. Shocker. Who were they playing last night?
I forget.
Okay, but sorry. I think they ended up winning. They won by like 1 point, but they celebrated too early, right? Wasn't that the reason? They celebrated and he got a technical foul.
He got in trouble. He was really confused why he got a technical because he didn't think he deserved it. And Michael Jordan's right there by the bench as he is every home game. Just like, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
Why don't you wait? It was the Pistons. That's right.
The Pistons. Okay.
They beat the Pistons. Yeah.
The mighty Detroit Pistons. Good win for Charlotte last night.
You know, he might also be, and I really truly believe this, I think he's the only owner in the NBA that can hit a player and the player not respond back in a negative way. Because it's one thing for like Mark Cuban to laugh and maybe pat the head. It's another for Mark Cuban to be frustrated, confused, and angry and smack him across the head. Like, what the hell is wrong with you?
That's a pretty valid point. If
he
any
might
other
be the only
owner
in all of sports that could do that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. If any other owner did that, there's going to be some backlash.
Well, you can't think of a cooler owner than Michael Jordan.
No, I mean, it's Michael Jordan. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yeah, there's, I mean, Cuban's the only other one that would kind of come to mind because just of his energy and what he brings. But
if Cuban smacked Wes Matthews up that, you think Iron Man's just going to sit there and take
it? Right, he'd look at him like, what the hell is wrong with you?
I think Malik Monk was initially shocked by it, then also kind of took in what you say, the AAU dad thing of, oh, that's Mike. You know, like, oh, that's my dad. I can't do anything right. to him.
Yeah, somebody, Keith in a garbage truck has texted in saying, I'd happily smack Neil O'Shea in the back of the head. Can we revert? Can we flip this one? Can we get Dame smacking people in the back of the head for not giving him any help on the roster?
To which I would say, Keith, you have to be able to see Neil O'Shea to smack him in the back of the head. He's hiding right now.
Yeah, he is. He's in his lair.
He's in his dungeon over there in Tualatin waiting for things to turn around so he can come out and be like, everybody was panicking, and throw it right back in our face if they win like four games in a row.
Now, two valid ones, and this is essentially just going to turn into a game of what former players are a part of ownership groups.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson's never been the guy to do that.
No, though. But I'm saying if he did, I don't think the players respond negatively.
You think Magic could get away
right,
with
like,
it?
You okay. know, like Clayton Kershaw, you know, blows it, and he's like, dude, what's wrong with you? Smacks him in the back of the head. I don't think Kershaw's reacting
Kershaw
to that.
Kershaw should get mad because Magic's not enough owner of the Dodgers right. for him to be doing
you
that.
You have to be over 1% in order to smack people in the
Magic,
back of the head.
You pay me $6 on my contract.
And then Derek Jeter, the other one, in Miami. It's Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, maybe those are two good
but
examples.
But it's going to end up but a game
of... Magic's not the owner, though.
No, he's a... Yeah,
he's the president. He's not the owner.
Sure. You mean Derek Jeter?
No. I was talking Magic.
Magic, yeah.
He's not the owner. Jeannie Buss is.
Yeah, well, and Derek Jeter's not the majority owner of the Marlins either.
See?
So...
Michael Jordan is the owner of the Hornets.
Hey, what about Steve Ballmer? He's crazy enough to do it.
No. Steve Ballmer could not do it. No.
Screaming over there on the sidelines. It's like Howard Dean in a
Howard Dean
election rally.
Yeah, I saw that last night, and I, you know, what sports figures? Because it's one thing to like a lot of athletes, right? Like we all have our favorites that we like watching now, and maybe from our childhood. I think it's different though if they were to lay hands on you, right? Like I'm not saying Michael Jordan really wound up the old arm and hit him the hardest he could. He didn't.
No,
it was more like a knucklehead slap. Like, what are you doing? But I do feel like if a lot of athletes touched you that way, you would want to fight them. So, like, what athletes would you be okay with smacking you in the back of the head where you don't feel the urge to go, I'm going to punch this dude square in the face?
There has to be certain size and weight requirements in order for me to not, I'll turn around and be like, all right, that's okay. You can smack me. I'm not doing anything about that.
Like mine would be Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice could come into the studio and if I'm over the clock by a minute, smack me in the back of the head and go, what the hell are you doing?
That segment sucked.
Stay on the clock and be better. And I don't think I would bat an eye. I'd probably be like, okay, Jerry, you got it.
Sorry, Jerry. I didn't mean to, man.
That's my bad, goat. That's my bad.
My bad, Jerry.
Outside of him, I don't know if there's another one. Maybe Gary. Maybe GP.
How many workplaces could get away with this?
Smacking somebody, smacking the back of the head.
Yeah, how would the normal employee out there respond? We walk out of here and Jeff Sacramento smacks us in the back of the head for having a bad show.
Now, I roofed a long time ago, so I know, you know, work climates have changed since I worked in the non-sports media industry. Is construction still a site where you think that could go by? That could fly and the guy doesn't do anything?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
I think there's very few workplaces where you could get away with this without some
Well, could
form
you
of,
name them then?
Outside of sports?
Outside of the sports, yeah.
Maybe in a bar kind of setting. I don't know, a bar owner to a bartender.
Isn't the bartender
like
grab a bottle and hit him over the
yeah,
head?
Yeah, probably. An empty whiskey bottle and smack him in the forehead.
We're doing what people do to us. People just, you know, sports radio. You guys are the worst. You do hot takes and you're sexist and all that. We're doing that to bartenders right
we
now,
are.
By the way.
We're categorizing
you guys are all
them.
Neanderthals who right. only resolve right. issues by hitting bottles over each other's heads.
That's the only way to solve it when you're inside of a bar.
Yeah. So bar, that's it?
I can't really think of anything else outside of sports. I think a lot of sports teams could get away with this. Leagues, coaches, that kind of stuff. But outside of that,
well, I think coaches could get away with it.
I think there's a handful of coaches out there that could smack a player in the back. Bobby Knight beat his players up for like 40 years.
Yeah.
Did you watch that 30 for 30, by the way, the other night?
Bobby Knight?
They just had The Last Days of Night. They aired that one on ESPN the
oh,
other
Oh, I watched
night.
That. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you this. I've always known Bobby Knight was a garbage human being.
It was a good reminder because I didn't remember a lot of the details about how it all went down
like
at the end and the university lying about it and covering up for him. Mm-hmm. And then the video, the anonymous source sending the video to CNN of him choking the player in practice. Yeah.
Like, that player was getting death threats too.
He was.
It was really bad.
Because he tried to bring down Bobby Knight.
Like frat boys on campus were rioting at that kid.
That's what sports fans do, man. They act irrationally about their teams, and they don't care what the person or the team did.
The porn industry is a good one.
I don't think you're smacking him in the back of the head, but I catch your drift.
You know what I'm saying?
I think certain other areas are okay.
You're allowed to smack.
But that's not like I'm mad at you. That's like a character situation.
It's like a role play.
It's a role play.
Kinky, you know?
I mean, if you're doing it behind the camera, then maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody said, I work in construction. If a superintendent hit me in the head, we definitely throw down.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think it's that way.
Yeah. Military. Somebody said you could get away with it in the military.
It's a good point, but I don't think a person, would they, I don't believe they do that, do they?
I don't know.
They scream in your face, but. Yeah. Maybe they result to violence. I don't know.
Hey, maybe 2018 is not bad. You can't smack your employees in the head unless you're Michael Jordan. Then you're the GOAT and you can get away with anything.
It'd be very weird if somebody did that to you, though, wouldn't it?
Would be strange.
Would you even know how to respond? I don't even know what I would do. Would I turn around and tell that guy to F off? Would I go report somebody to HR? I feel like I wouldn't because I wouldn't want to fill out paperwork.
Right, right.
Maybe I'd just go.
Like, dude, what's up? What's wrong?
Did you just hit me in the back of the head?
What did I do? What's happening here?
Really worth what I just did, hitting me in the back of the head? The hell's going on? All right, we got a good show today. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague, at Theodore Johnson, at Brandon Sprague. We have a lot of things we're going to get to. Of course, the Daily Ticker. We got our NFL picks and some football to get to. But we are going to start with this. Coming up next, Friday could mean moving day. And I'll tell you what that means. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Get up. Get on up. Get up. Get on up.
This is Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Got the Daily Ticker coming up at 12:30. Go around the sports landscape. I mentioned NFL picks. Stephen A. Smith did not have a good day on live TV.
He had a terrible day on live TV today.
He had a day where everybody goes, oh, you make $6 million a year. That's crazy.
I actually have, and we're going to talk about that later, I have some really good news that will make you think maybe sports fans are smarter than we give them credit for.
I have, okay, one, I can't wait for what you're talking about.
Okay.
I have no clue.
Okay.
And two, I've always said, I don't have this job because I know more about sports than anybody listening right now. Right? Like, that's not what it's about. There are people out there that know so much more about different sports because they just love it. So I think sports fans have always been really smart. I think they get a bad rap sometimes of, oh, these idiot people don't know what they're talking about. I think there's far too many people that are smart enough to know what they are talking about. But we'll see what you're talking about a little bit later on. Friday could be moving day, my man.
I hope so.
Friday really might be the day. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, I'll tell you. The Blazers are sucking. Playing terrible basketball. They lost yet again. And if they lose to Toronto, who just thumped Golden State without Kawhi Leonard on Friday, I really will tell you now, I'll be surprised if any move does not happen. Because at some level, you've got to answer for it, right? And I think the attendance is probably going to be good because Raptor fans actually travel well or they're in different cities.
They own the North.
They show up when their teams are in town or when their team is in town. And so I think you'll have a decent Raptor contingent because you always do. And you pair that with the Blazers playing like absolute dog crap right now. And if they lose that game against Toronto, and right now I'd be willing to wager they might not be favored.
No.
You're going to lose the city. I mean, you might already be at that point, but you lose to Toronto. What will that be? Will that be 11 of 16?
They're 5-10 in their last 15 games. Yeah, so they would be 5-11 in their last 16 if they lose on Friday.
When you get that bad, that's when people are like, okay, you're not good, even if you win two or three games. Like, I heard a clip, you know, I was driving home, and I turned over because the Blazer game was on early. They played Houston that day. And I heard a clip from Dame at one of their practices, and this was following their win over the T-Wolves. And said, you know, oh, nobody was worried about that. We've won two games in a row. I don't know why people are still worried.
Right.
And I've said this before. I really do believe it. I think Dame is too far in to even be able to identify what they are as a franchise. Now, maybe he has different feelings inside and has not shared that publicly yet.
Which I think he does.
But right now, what he is giving us, and he's tried to be a guy who's honest and forthright about things, he's selling me on something that's not true. And so I hear clips like that, and Quick wrote another piece today. I think Friday could be a really pivotal day because if they lose, I don't know how, if you're Neil O'Shea, you're not making some sort of kind of move. Right.
Well, and even if they win on Friday, I don't know what that proves. This is a team, I think, that has shown you through a now 15-game stretch who they are. Now, are they a well below 500 team for the rest of the year? No. The schedule's going to lighten up. They'll have more home games than road games, you know, in certain parts. And they're eventually going to, you know, figure it out and kind of counterbalance this thing, because you saw them get off to a 10-3 start. But what you have learned 28 games in is that nothing has changed. And if anything, you're a worse team than where you were last year. You're barely above 500. I do expect you to lose on Friday because Kawhi Leonard should play. And if you do, you're going to be one game above 500 after a 10-3 start. And I think it's interesting to have this whole situation come to a head against a team who you've been compared against. And the Raptors, who, now granted, they've reached higher heights than you have in terms of playoff success, you know, getting to the conference finals in the East, but you were compared to them because they made the move in the offseason. They were a team that had this nucleus together. They were a great regular season team. They were butting their head against the wall in the playoffs, and they couldn't break it down. And they shook up the NBA landscape with the trade this summer and saying, you know what, this isn't good enough. LeBron James is out of the East. Let's take a roll of the dice. We'll move on from DeMar DeRozan, even though it's probably not great publicly with our fans. We're going to take a risk on Kawhi Leonard, a guy who's been hurt, has character flaws, some would say, and might leave in one season. Let's roll the dice and see where we go. Guess who has the best record in the NBA right now? Guess who after last night is a team that people are actually saying has a legitimate shot at winning a title? It's Toronto, because their owner came out and said, you know what, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. And he said, I know this roster can't win a title, so I need to shake things up. And so I think it's fascinating that this situation is coming to a head against the team that was willing to take the roll of the dice that every Blazer fan wanted the Blazers to take, but yeah, they were unwilling to do in the offseason.
Here's where I get a little concerned is if they lose, and I don't know if Neil would go this far, because in the Zach Lowe piece back in November, Lowe had a site in it that Neil had kind of fought for Stotts. They disagreed on some things in the past, but he had kind of fought for Stotts not to get right canned by Paul. I don't know if he makes the move because he was willing to fight for him, that he makes this move in December, because he's also a guy that wants to point out to you every single time he talks to the media, well, we can't overreact. Everybody overreacts too much. Right. There's no doubt about that. But when you lose 11 out of 16 games, there needs to be some reaction to it. I almost wonder, does he go and the move is fire Terry Stotts? Because maybe it's Stotts, yeah, maybe it's a combination of things. CJ, the way he plays, the roster itself we know is not great. There's a lot that goes into it, but I don't know what that move will be. I might be dumb in thinking there is going to be a move if they lose Friday, because there might not be. But
right,
I just truly believe if you lose that game at home, you're going to get a lot of fans that walk out of that building going, wow, I just spent $200 to watch my team lose their 11th game in 16.
Right.
Add concession prices to that, and why do I want to come back for this product, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if firing Stotts is the right answer. But
I'm not telling you answer. I just don't know what his right move would be.
I think the point that we're both trying to make here is that if there's not a move, you're going to lose the fan base. If there's not some sort of, like we talked about this with the Pac-12 and how they screwed everything up with the replay. There was no recourse. There was no reaction to it. There was no penalty to it. And I think Blazer fans are going to get to that point where it's like, we're not going to change. You're just going to roll the same thing out every night. Like, you're not going to try and make, I don't care if it's a minor move, a major move, firing a coach. I don't think firing Stotts is the right answer, but I wouldn't be that against it at this point. Something needs to be done, and nothing has changed. And I think that is where we just look at this. Like, did you think we were crazy? That's why, I took the under for the year. Now, I might end up being wrong.
I'll still stay with the
sure,
over.
And I wouldn't be shocked if they hit it, but the main reason I did was this was a team last year that was barely above 500. They hit a bunch of teams in a row with banged up players. They won 13 straight, and that's how they got the 3 seed. But they were a couple of games away from missing the playoffs last year. And they got worse in the offseason. You didn't get better on the bench. You lost one of your best energy guys, one of your best interior defenders, and Ed Davis, because they didn't want to pay him, $4 million, whatever it was that Brooklyn was giving him. They didn't want to pay him in the offseason, so you lose that guy. They're a worse team this year than they were last year, and nothing has changed. There's been no penalty for it. Something needs to be done. Whether it's a smart move or not, I don't really care. You got to do something at this point.
What percentage of the city do you think they have lost?
at this point.
They're always going to have the diehards that care no matter what. But I think if you lose Friday and there's nothing that's changing and you're just rolling this same thing out, I'd say 20, 25%.
I had a text group going on yesterday after that loss, and I'm talking like people who, they always find a way to buy in, right? Like every single game, they won't watch every game, but they'll watch almost all of them, and it's, they'll cheer for them. They want them to win no matter what the circumstance. There was a text group last night that I was a part of, and it was abandoning ship. It was like, no, we're good.
Well, most
I'm done with this.
And most of my Blazer fan friends have reached a point where they're rooting against the team because they feel like that's what it's going to take for a shakeup. People are ready for a shakeup. And if you find a way to have the same season you had last year where you're above 500, sneak into the playoffs, there's a worry there that nothing again is going to change. So you want to see this thing get really bad in order to force their hand. I've said, like, if this really falls off the rails and you lose Friday and then you look at the stretch for the rest of the month and you continue playing at a well below 500 clip and you're the second worst team in the Western Conference, maybe that's finally the situation where they look in the mirror and realize, you know what, this isn't working and something needs to be done.
And we'll find out Friday. They play Toronto, who just thumped Golden State. We'll find out if Friday could potentially be moving day and the Blazers, I don't know, maybe they make a move or maybe they stand pat because Neil Olshey wants to be the smartest guy in the room who's always right. And it's like a prove it F you to everybody that he knows exactly what he's doing and there's no need to shake up the roster. All right, let's move on to the daily ticker. We got a couple stops to make, three to be exact, and we'll do that next.
This is Dirt and Sprague, Gun 1080, The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. 12:32 here on Portland Sports Leader 1080, The Fan. We've got three stops to make on the daily ticker, and we start in Baltimore with Ryan Mink of BaltimoreRavens.com. He is on the Catlin Capital Hotline now. Ryan, thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate the time. Let's just start with what's been the general reaction to the Ravens deciding to go with Lamar over a healthy Joe Flacco from the fan base?
From the fan base, I think it's been actually it's probably been pretty split. I mean, there's a lot of people going both ways on this. You know, a lot of people are excited by what Lamar brings and obviously the wins that he's brought. You know, he won his first three games as a starter and then took the Chiefs to overtime. So pretty good track record so far. But, you know, there's a lot of people who remember all the great things that Joe's done here and still see a quarterback with a great arm that if you, you know, put the right weapons around him, he can have a lot of success. So I think it's a little bit split, but in general, I think Baltimore is pretty excited about Lamar.
Well, and if they continue to play well and close, I mean, he's 3-1 now as a starter, and they're going with him, a winnable game this week at home against Tampa. If they continue to play well, what's the reaction this offseason, and what do they decide to do with Joe Flacco in your mind?
Well, I can't see them having him back at, you know, mid-20 million for to be a backup. And certainly with the Ravens naming Lamar Jackson as a starter, that's what it would be for Joe. You know, I don't think they want to have an open competition for a starting job. So they're not going to pay him that to be a backup, which, you know, unless something happens with Lamar down the stretch here, means that Joe Flacco probably isn't on this team next year. And whether it be via trade or release, the Ravens obviously would prefer trade. Mm-hmm. You know, I probably would expect that Joe will be somewhere else.
Well, how's that move? How's it impacted the locker room in your opinion? How do they feel about Lamar now and moving on from Joe Flacco?
Well, I think, you know, they've obviously had the past 4 weeks to really kind of marinate on that. And I think that there's a lot of support for the move. I mean, the defense has really enjoyed having Lamar out there because the Ravens have been able to run the ball, control the clock, and keep the defense off the field, which, you know, the best defense is a good offense. And so it's kept them fresher, enabled them to make more plays, you know, especially late in the game. So I think the defense is really in favor of not, you know, the Ravens are among the best in the league and not going 3-and-out, especially with Lamar Jackson under center. So that keeps the defense fresh.
Absolutely.
The offensive line obviously loves it. They love to run the ball. What offensive line doesn't? So they're in favor. The running backs love it. So really it's just the wide receivers who aren't getting as many passes thrown their way.
Yeah. Ryan Mink, BaltimoreRavens.com. So kind to join us here in Portland. Thanks for the lowdown with the Ravens, man, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
All right, thank you.
All right, there we go. Ryan Mink, BaltimoreRavens.com on the Ravens deciding to go with Lamar Jackson
over a healthy Joe Flacco. Doesn't think Flacco is back, and I don't think that surprises anybody.
With the salary, I mean, you got to pick up that option for mid-20s, so I think you're going to try and trade him, but it's a difficult salary to trade. You're going to have to convince a team to pay Joe Flacco for 1 year somewhere in the mid-20 million range. That might be a tough sell, and it could get to the point where they just have to release him. And I know there's a handful of teams looking for quarterbacks this offseason, depending on how the draft order and which guys decide to go and who ends up taking somebody with a first-round pick. But he could end up being signed as a free agent as well if you can't find a trade partner for him.
I was listening to Mike and Patrick yesterday that were filling it on primetime, and they were talking about how Joe Flacco is just such a better quarterback. And
the numbers don't bear it out.
They do not bear it out. He is not this night and day better guy.
Right.
But I get it. Lamar has his limits. There's no doubt. All right, we move on in our daily ticker now on the Catlin Capital Hotline, all the way to the East Coast with our good friend John Brennan of usbets.com, covering the gambling scene over there on the East Coast. And I wanted to bring him on to talk about the sports gambling that's going on in the state of New Jersey. John, thanks for the time, man. $928 million in just 6 months. How much does the state get of that, and what's been the reaction to sports gambling over there?
Yeah, that's what they call the handle, which is the amount wagered. It's a little bit misleading, frankly, because the net revenue from an operator, whether it's a casino or a racetrack or an online operator, might be 6 or 7% of that. And then the tax rate in different states might be anywhere from, say, 10 to 50% of that. So it's a fraction of a fraction. So in terms of tax dollars, no state's going to make $1 billion in taxes on sports betting. And keep in mind, in Nevada, while obviously always best known for sports betting, about 2% of casinos' revenue for the year comes from sports betting with the low margins. It's just an extra amenity there because Las Vegas itself is such a tourist attraction for so many other reasons that it's just an extra thing. So it varies from state to state how beneficial it can be.
Well, and I'm curious how these numbers look compared to how experts or people like yourself maybe thought they would. I mean, when this all came about and you're kind of trying to throw numbers around in your head of what New Jersey could do as this guinea pig of a state outside of Nevada, how have the numbers look compared to how you thought they would?
Well, there's been something, a bit of a surprise, which is that the brick and mortar, they call it, the casino and the racetrack, the in-person betting is, going in the 70, 80 million a month range handle. But it's not growing that much. It's pretty stable already within 6 months. But the online version is enormous. It doubled brick and mortar in October. It almost tripled it in November. I think it will triple it in December. So states like Delaware and Rhode Island are not offering an online version. And, frankly, if you take people under 40, that's where the money is. They don't necessarily want to travel 20 to 50 miles to a casino or a racetrack if they can do it at home. And that's sort of where the money is.
John, out here in Oregon, I think we're pretty close to jumping on with this. We've heard rumblings about an online version for football for us. What would you say to the audience listening right now that is against having sports gambling legalized? What would you say to those folks in terms of what it benefits for and just how you feel about it where you live?
Well, I think it's a fair concern. Obviously, especially with online, there's an incredible convenience factor. Somebody who might be a little bit prone to gambling too much, if a casino is far enough away, they might only go a couple times a year. And even if they don't do well, it doesn't break the bank. But if somebody has access 24/7 in their own living room or bedroom, there's a concern. I've always been intrigued by United Kingdom is about 10, 12 years ahead of the United States on this stuff. So they're really the guinea pig. And I've been surprised. The studies I've seen suggest that the number of compulsive gamblers doesn't really change much with the extra access. But the compulsive gamblers who already have a problem, this can make it worse. So on the one hand, I don't think it grows the number of people who get into trouble, but it does increase the amount of trouble that the problem gamblers get into. So clearly, any state that's going to go forward, they need to have good funding, good programs, self-exclusion, they call it. So somebody who's struggling, they can wipe themselves out of an option to go to a casino or even to play online. Also limits on the amount you can bet per month. Some people realize, well, if I can only bet $100 a month, I can live with that. I can lose that a month. And that's their limit. So if they have a bad 2 weeks, then they're able to just say, well, I guess I'm going to have to wait. So there definitely have to be consideration given to the potential issues there.
Yeah, there's only a problem with the limit per month if you start riding a heater and you can't bet over that limit. So, John, thanks so much for joining us, man. Keep up the good work, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
All right, thank you.
All right, there we go. John Brennan, usbets.com, joining us on the Catlin Capital Hotline over there in Jersey. If you guys missed it, Darren Rovell, and he's right. It's not what they've brought in. I think they actually, as a state, of the $928 million wagered in 6 months, the state of New Jersey has taken in around, what is it? It's like 8 or $9 million from, okay. They took $8 million in from last month's $330 million.
Okay, so you can do the math on what the percentages are there. And you got to keep in mind, I mean, this is just a start, too. I mean, we're 6 months into this thing, so who knows what it's going to look like year over year. Yeah. And then maybe some folks, obviously, having a hesitation to jumping in right away. There's going to be more sites that pop up that allow it, probably some more brick-and-mortar spots, as he's talking about. So you're going to have more options, and it's just it's an easy cash grab for the states, and a lot of states are struggling financially right now, and I think it makes sense for them.
All right, our final stop in the Daily Ticker is going to be up north in Seattle to talk Seattle Mariners. Our good friend Corey Brock of The Athletic, he's got all his good articles up there, is where you can find him. He joins us now on the Catlin Capital Hotline. Corey, thanks for linking up with us, man. We always appreciate the time. I guess I'll just start before diving into any trades and players. What the hell are the Mariners doing this offseason?
Yeah, well, actually, we are in Vegas right now for the last day of the winter meetings and flying back today. But it has been an eventful, really a month or so. I think the Mariners have now made 7 trades as they attempt to kind of go through this. You're kind of splitting hairs what you're calling this, rebuilding, reimagining the roster. But what it is they're trying to take one step back for 2019 and hopefully pick 2 steps forward. And by acquiring a lot of young, impactful players and moving assets off their roster, they're hopeful that maybe in 2020 or 2021, they could be competitive again. So it's an interesting way to go about shaping your offseason, but I think they felt like the way the American League was structured with so many powerful teams and where 89 wins got you nothing last year, this was their only step that they could take at this point.
Well, and let's update folks on what happened today, because there was, I mean, it feels like every 48 hours there's a new trade for you guys to report on and talk about. They make a deal today, trading somebody who they already acquired this offseason. What went down, and then do you expect Edwin Encarnacion to be on the Mariners this year?
No, I think he's going to go exactly the way of Carlos Santana, who was a Mariner for, I think, about 9 days. So I hope nobody rushed out and bought that jersey for Christmas. So I would caution fans doing the same with Encarnacion. No, this is they're going to end up spinning him off too, I believe, to continue to try and gain more long-term assets to help them again when their competitive window opens back up again in a couple of years. The deal today also helps them from a financial standpoint. So, and they get a draft pick as well, which can't be undervalued. That's the 77th overall pick in next year's draft. They have 3 picks now in the top 77. They felt like this was a good way to boost your farm system and also acquire an asset in Encarnacion that you could eventually spin off to another team.
Yeah. Corey Brock joining us to talk some Seattle Mariners here on the Daily Ticker, the latest with the M's. A lot of movement, as you mentioned, about just is it a full down, tear down, or are they just going to try to get back in this in a couple years? We've had a lot of fans down here in Portland who are Mariner fans, been very frustrated. They have vocalized that. I'm sure it's the same, if not probably much worse, up in Seattle. Just get your 2 cents. How do you feel? Do you feel this is the right direction for this organization, or do you think they should have stuck it out and maybe tried to make a couple moves to bolster the roster and try to get in that playoff picture?
Yeah, it's a fair question, and I think where they were, you know, the payroll was approaching about $170 million last year. You still have some immovable contracts on this team. Felix Hernandez is going to be making $27 million this coming year. It's the final year of his deal. Kyle Seager still has several years and quite a bit of money left on his deal. So, you know, I think they took a look at last year. Where they won 89 games, which on the surface looks good. And in many years would get you in the wild card, but, you know, they did it with a negative run differential. They were kind of propped up on some veterans that, are aging, and the roster was continuing to get older. So I think they were trying to be proactive and tried to decide a path this year. And it led them to the decision again, to take a step back, maybe move as many assets off your major league roster to acquire long-term players that could help you. Again, no guarantee, guys, that any of this is going to work out. That's kind of the deal with prospects, right? Prospects are suspects until they become something else. But, I just really think that it was the most pragmatic thing for them to do. They're able to lower payroll a little bit, acquire some really interesting young players. But I completely understand the fan perspective here. This is a tough one for fans who are now going on 18 years without seeing the Mariners play in a playoff game. Guys, this is the longest postseason drought in North American sports right now. So that's a tough one. But I think a lot of fans, as we've gone through the last month, have sort of come to terms and understanding what the Mariners are at least trying to do, and understanding that, you know, they were able to get Robinson Cano off their books, which no one thought that they could do. And so they're just kind of working forward with the future in mind here. And while they're doing it, they're making a lot of interesting trades and keeping me very busy.
There we go. Yeah, they are. Corey Brock joining us from the Vegas airport. Have a good flight, my man. And thanks for the latest on the M's. We'll catch up with you down the road.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Corey Brock of The Athletic, covering the Mariners about the moves that they made this offseason. So the three stops in the Daily Ticker today. We went to Baltimore to talk about the Ravens, went to Jersey for the latest on sports gambling, and Seattle, well, Vegas, but Seattle with Corey Seattle. Brock. Yeah,
they're all interesting stories. I mean, you're looking at the end of an era in Baltimore. A Super Bowl MVP quarterback getting benched for Lamar Jackson was something that maybe most didn't see coming this year, and I think it's a pretty monumental choice for them to stick with the rookie. The New Jersey gambling numbers are a big positive for those of us who can't wait to see it in our respective state, and I think it's something that other states should look at and say, man, look at the money that we could create for this. I understand the fear, but those fears exist in anything that you can get addicted to, and a lot of that stuff is already legal in our state. And then with the Mariners, I mean, another trade. They have blown up essentially the entire roster outside of a couple of folks, and you're really crossing your fingers if you're a Mariner fan, hoping this all pans out in a couple of years.
All right, I want to go to college football next. It's 12:47, back with more on The Fan. When I think back on all
the crap I learned in high school. This is Dirt and Sprague, gone 1080, The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. We've got a lot in the second hour.
Look at us going 3 for 3 this week with the Daily Ticker.
You just pissed me off. You motivated me to keep doing this.
We're like almost a week in. It hasn't fallen apart. We're even making an open for this thing.
We are making an open, yes.
Like it's getting an official open for the 12:30 segment.
Somebody texted in, nice ticker report, guys. That was almost professional. Yeah. We're almost there. We're getting there. I promise.
Somebody's demanding us. P1 Aiden wants us to talk Stephen A. Smith already. We'll get to it.
We're going to get to
Stephen
A. We'll
get to old Stephen.
Actually, I'm going to kick off the second hour with old Stephen A. Smith.
Can we pull that, too, with a couple of like teams we're talking about today? Like, you know who needs to play big for the Blazers tomorrow night? Brian Grant needs to have a big game. Like, it's going to come down to Brian Grant controlling the paint.
Yeah, Brian Grant needs to step up, but I'll tell you right now, I'm really worried about if Marcus Camby and Vince Carter are going to destroy them in the paint.
Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter is a 1-2 punch. It's tough to stop.
Dude, Tracy McGrady, that up-and-coming wing, man, he might end up having a really good career. I'm not sure, though.
Can we get a Steve Blake reference in there, maybe?
Steve Blake, yeah.
That's an ultimate, like, Blazer of old age.
Joel
like,
Prisbilla, got to get the vanilla gorilla going in
gorilla,
the paint.
Baby.
Come on, man.
Yeah, so we'll get to that. I actually wanted to talk about something I didn't think I would ever care about.
Okay, what do you got?
Did you know, because I know you know the story, but did you know before 3 days ago who was playing in the Independence Bowl?
No.
Okay.
And I think it's Temple versus, who are they playing? Duke.
Yeah.
The Dukies.
And you only know that because of the story.
I only know this because of the story.
So the Independence Bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana is hosting Temple and Duke.
Catch the fever. Let's go to Shreveport in December.
The Fighting Cutcliffs, man. And Temple's head coach, Jeff Collins, he left and now he is at Georgia Tech. So the interim coach for the Owls is a guy, and you could not ask for more. What do they say? Is it central casting?
Yeah, straight out of central casting.
Central casting. Then what he looks like, how he acts, how he sounds. Then their interim coach, Ed Foley, who's filling in now for Jeff Collins. And he had a press conference when they got to Shreveport. And this is the interim coach for Temple, Ed Foley. Listen to this.
Living in a van down by the river.
The heck? It's it says it's playing.
Well, it's not. It's not.
Well, the reason he's straight out of Central Casting, Brandon.
It's in Q and everything.
Well, I don't even know what the point is.
I hope that we play well, but I know that we'll play hard. And we're going to find out about Duke, and we're going to find out about Temple, and we're going to find out about which one of those football clubs wants to hit each other harder and longer. That's what we're going to decide here on the 27th. And while we're getting ready to do that, I hope that you see the finest group of young men that's ever been through Shreveport. I hope you have a chance to see them hold a door open for you, or say thank you for being here, or be truly appreciative, because guys, I love this team. And I love these players, and I know you will too when you get around. Please, get around our players. They are going to love you, they are going to love Shreveport, and you're going to love them. And they are going to be so appreciative of being here, guys, that it's going to be one of the greatest teams that you've ever had here, I promise you that. So we're fired up to be here. Thank you to everybody for having us.
Oh my God. Anybody else listening to Ed Foley and just seeing in their minds Chris Farley on SNL and
hiking
doing
his pants up,
doing a motivational speech,
falling over the coffee table.
God.
Living in a van down by the river.
So a little delayed there, but there's Ed Foley, the interim coach for Temple, getting you pumped up for Temple Duke because nobody appreciates Temple football like these guys.
I love the throwback quote, too, of we're going to find out which football team wants to hit the other one harder for 60 minutes. I love that. I'm actually excited to watch the Independence Bowl now in Shreveport, Louisiana. They're never going to meet a nicer football team than the Temple Owls coming to town.
There'll never be a nicer. I love these guys.
I'm actually now considering gambling on certain games, bowl games. I'm looking at some spreads. I'm throwing all my money on Duke. I'm not trusting.
Oh, you're not going to go the Foley route.
I'm not trusting Matt Foley.
You think he's going to end up falling through a table?
Doesn't sound like the best X's and O's coach if he's talking about hitting each other as hard as they can for 60 minutes and how great they're going to appreciate the folks of Shreveport and they're going to hold the door open for the fine citizens of Louisiana. I'm going to go with the fighting Cutcliffe's in this one.
So there you go. Interim coach Ed Foley filling in for Jeff Collins.
Can we just remove that interim label? Can we give that guy the head job at Temple?
He kind of is the new Ed O for me. We need him in college football.
Yes, we'll play the sound bites whenever he talks.
Give that guy a microphone. All right, loaded second hour. We start with Stephen A. Smith. Could you make $5 million a year to not know a damn thing about a sport? I bet you could. Stephen A. Smith did it this morning, and we'll give it to you next on The Fan.